Going Deep Podcast. We got Super Bowl champion Willie Colon.
What's going on, everybody?
We got the man of a million voices, Joey Molinaro.
Morning, Stephen Che.
We got a big week, especially on this pod. A lot of personnel that we're either familiar with or going to be familiar with. The headline, obviously, Antonio Brown signs with my Bucks. 1 year deal worth up to $2.5 million. I believe it is $1 million base. All of it, the rest are incentives, including a $750,000 bonus if the Bucks win the Super Bowl, which I hope he gets paid out on. But guys, how should I feel about this? I mean, obviously, it's a very controversial signing. He has a very checkered past. Clearly, he's been suspended for the first 8 weeks of the league year. He's eligible to return after week 8, so he can actually play for the Bucks next week. Week 9, we are playing the Saints, which is a huge divisional game. What are you guys' thoughts on Antonio Brown? Should I be excited? Joey, let's start with you.
I mean, you break it down to two different sections, Stephen Che, and you mentioned it, checkered pass. So you got to worry about, is he going to show up on time? Is he going to show up for his COVID tests that are going to be mandatory? Is he going to flip his shit on a nurse who's trying to give him the COVID tests that are required to happen? Right. I'm going to worry about all those things. Is the lawsuit in December going to come through to where he's going to be able to be suspended by the NFL again? All things that you got to worry about. But then, hey, you look at on the field. Yeah, you got to be excited. The one half that he had with Tom Brady last year, I think he had 4 or 5 catches, a touchdown. Obviously, TB12 likes him, wants to work with him again, even though Bruce Arians, for whatever reason, wanted to shy those rumors away. We all know that Tom Brady was definitely going to be influential in bringing him in. So it's just a tale of two different scenarios. One, is he going to cooperate with everything that he needs to cooperate? And two, hell yeah, because you're getting a hell of a player.
Willie, you have personal experience with him. What kind of guy am I getting on my team?
Same guy you've been seeing in the media. Like, what do you expect? Like, listen, I think I'm torn because I know him personally. And when I was in the Steelers locker room, and he walked in as a bright eyed, big smile, a big old smile. At the time, he had a son with him. He was a single father with just so much to offer. You could tell he was a really hardworking guy, came from extreme humble beginnings. You know, he walked into that Steeler locker room wanting to be a Steeler. The kid worked his tail off. You knew he was talented, always had this enthusiasm and kind of this energy about him. And you fell in love with him. I fell in love with him. When I left the Steelers and I started to see the man he was becoming, it was troubling because that wasn't the Antonio Brown that I was accustomed to being around, who I had grown to know. And, you know, I know a lot of guys in that locker room, a lot of guys were unhappy with who he was becoming and what he was allowed to do. On top of that, he was a star. He was a megastar. You know what I mean? He was as big as it got in the NFL. You know, and I think he's all of 5'10", 5'11". But he plays like a 6'5 receiver. You know what I mean? So you're talking about a guy who can, you know, absolutely destroy double teams. He's hard to guard, instant offense. When the ball's in the air, he can go get it, especially with his body type. He's a win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, who just, you know, they're dealing with two injury-plagued receivers, one in Chris Godwin and one in Mike Evans. We know Mike Evans has a history of being plagued with hamstring injuries. So is Chris Godwin. And Chris Godwin just broke his finger on top of that. So BA had came out and said, listen, this is more of an insurance policy. Well, it's about to cash in. Now, the thing is, what type of shape is Antonio Brown going to be in? Because we know he's in physical shape. You know, he can run the routes. He's going to do everything he can do from a physical aspect. But we also watch Gronkowski, right, who I don't think anybody can say Gronk has ever been out of shape. But there's a difference between working out in a gym shape and his football shape. And I think now we're starting to see Gronk get in shape. And so now he's being more effective. He's starting to pop out. He's starting to pop more on tape because I think, one, he's in football shape. And two, mentally, I think he's into the game. And the same thing has to happen for Antonio Brown. He's been been away from the game for a little bit, dealing with all his demons and dealing with everything he's been forced to deal with. But on top of that, there's going to have to be an acclimation period. There's still a period where he's going to have to kind of, the light's going to have to go on for him. Now, can he put his feet in cleats and turn on right away? He has that ability, But I think we may see something like what we witnessed with Gronk. It's going to take 1 or 2 or 3 weeks for him to really kind of get his mojo back. And when that does happen, it's going to be scary because AB and Brady, we got a glimpse of it, you know, against the Dolphins when they started connecting and it looked like a problem. So the fact that it's happening in Tampa Bay and, you know, listen, on top of that, to what Joey was talking about, you know, he played with me. He played with Byron Leftwich. He played with Larry Foote. He played with Antoine Randle. He played under Bruce Arians. You know, he's going home technically. He's just going to be wearing a different uniform. But these guys know AB on a personal level. And so that type of connection, that type of communication, hopefully AB has respect for these guys and understands, like, listen, I'm not dealing with the other jokers I was dealing with. I'm dealing with guys who knew me from a grassroots level. So hopefully I come correct. And I'm not trying to mess this thing up. Hopefully that's the case. I want AB to be successful. I want AB to be a better person off the field. I want AB to be a better role model for his kids because ultimately his kids look up to him, especially when, you know, imagine like where me and you are fathers. If our kids play with other kids and I'm like, hey, you know, we love your dad, but what about this? That's hard to swallow. You know what I mean? That's hard to deal with. So I want better for AB, and I want him to be a better person. Hopefully he's matured through all this. But like to Joey's point, we just got to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty conflicted on it because, you know, I've talked to you about it. I've talked to, you know, several people that kind of have inside knowledge about Antonio Brown, and, you know, none of the reports necessarily are glowing about him as a person. What I would say, and, you know, I have to try and reason with this because, you know, he's a Buck. No matter what, whoever is wearing a Bucks uniform, whether it's, you know, Jameis Winston, Antonio Brown, whoever, Tom Brady, I'm rooting for them. So I'm absolutely cheering for Antonio Brown when he steps on the field. You know, he doesn't have a great reputation, but I will say this is kind of, I don't want to say it's his last chance because, you know, there can always be, another team.
How can it not be his last chance?
Yeah, I mean, there were suitors for him. When you look at the other suitors, like the Seattle Seahawks, the Baltimore Ravens, I mean, these teams are, you know, teams that are going to be in the mix in December and January and maybe even February. So this was going to be an impact signing. He chose the Bucks. Tom Brady lobbied for him over the summer, was told essentially no. And then the story goes kind of like you said, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin both ended the year on IR with hamstring injuries, both have missed games this year with hamstring injuries. The Bucks offense is a very vertical offense. You're going to run a lot of go routes. So your hamstrings are going to be strained. Bruce Arians called him an insurance policy. And to be fair, we got a glimpse of what the Bucks look like with limited weapons. I mean, OJ Howard, who was one of Brady's favorite targets, ruptured his Achilles, out for the year. We saw against Chicago, Chris Godwin being out, and then Mike Evans essentially playing on one leg, and the offense looked terrible. So if you can add a guy who, like you said, is instant offense at a low risk, I mean, they can basically cut him whenever. And Bruce Arians has said if this goes to court during the season or whatever, and he's found guilty of, you know, whatever he was charged of, he's going to be gone. So they really have all the leverage. And what I can say is, listening to the press conferences, they did ask all the veteran players and the team leaders on that team before they signed him, hey, are you comfortable with us bringing this guy in? And all of them to a man said yes. Now, when you look at his performance on the field, you know, the NFL top 100 is, you know, we can kind of take that with a grain of salt, but in 2019, going into that season after he was really, traded by the Steelers, he was the number two player in the league. Correct. So, I mean, you look at production on the field, this guy, if he's 80% of that guy he was a year and a half ago, he's the best player on the team. So, I mean, it's really hard to dispute this signing from a football standpoint. Off the field, I certainly understand those concerns. But, I mean, for a team that's looking to win now and has a short window, you got to love the move.
Yeah, but I think I
totally agree with you, Steven. But, Will, you can definitely attest to this, I'm sure. But I know it was a huge problem later on in his tenure with the Steelers. And in this COVID world, like I said off the top, where everything is even more structured and has to be even more structured, Antonio Brown was notoriously missing out on meetings, being late, being 2 or 3 hours late. People didn't know where the hell he was. That would be my biggest concern at the moment, you know, besides like the upcoming court case that he has in December. If you can get him there, that's all going to be fine and dandy. But honestly, as a Steelers fan who had seen the reports of the last 3 years or 4 years of his time in Pittsburgh, the guy would just go AWOL sometimes, and right. He would be 3 hours late to different things and press conferences and meetings. How is it going to hold up in a COVID structured world? That would be really my biggest concern, because you just don't know with him.
Well, my thinking with that is, if that happens, like, he's probably gone. I can't imagine him having much of a leash at all. Whereas, you know, in Pittsburgh, when he was, you know, the second best player in the league, and, you know, getting paid a lot of money and looking to get paid even more money, you know, he did have what he thought was a big leash until he got traded. Now he's kind of, you know, on his, I don't know if it's his last chance, but it's his damn close to last chance, if not it.
What's frustrating about this is we're not asking AB to do anything other than
just be a regular guy.
We're not asking him, you know, that's what's frustrating about this generation and in a whole. Like, we're actually to show up, go to work. You get paid a lot of money. And mind you, you're getting paid a lot of money in the middle of a pandemic where people don't know how they're going to eat, turn on the lights, or damn near put clothes on their children's back. We're talking about a guy who's going to get paid, well, you said damn near $1 million for damn near a month, depending on what happens in December. You know what I mean? So just like, sometimes you got to compartmentalize what we're talking about here. AB, just be the best you can be and do your job. I mean, you're getting paid, and considering that deserve a second chance. There are things out there that prove you don't deserve a second chance. You know what I mean? So it's wild, man, that we're just asking the bare. We're pretty much, and the Bucs organization, right. NFL fans are asking the bare minimum for a guy who, by all accounts, they should close the door on. I mean, like, not to be weird about it. Like, I'm not for domestic violence, but Ray Rice was, before that video, before that shit came out in Atlantic City, he was a model citizen. You know what I mean? Like, he was a great guy. Like, he did things for the Ravens. He was a big time running back. But now, because of that one video and that evidence, and it was, and rightfully so, it was horrible. It was a horrific act. Hitting his fiance. We never seen the lights of day. We never seen Ray Rice again. Antonio Brown has video. There's footage of him, of his kids walking into the back of a cop car. His wife, him cussing out his wife. There's claims. There's all type of stuff that's out there, and here he gets another shot. So my point is, like, Antonio Brown should, I pray to God, he just keeps his mouth shut, he goes to work, and he just does the damn thing. You know what I mean? And so, and we're asking the bare minimum. We're not asking anything from Antonio Brown than what any other NFL player is being asked to do in the NFL.
So I have kind of a cold truth here, is that when Ray Rice hit his fiance, you know, nobody obviously endorsed that. He was really not playing well. He was averaging, I believe, below 4 yards a carry. We look at another situation where there is video of things like this. You know, Kareem Hunt with the video of him like kicking the girls. He's a really good player. He's a young player. The Browns signed him. There were other suitors for him. The Browns just re-signed him. You know, there are other videos. Joe Mixon punched a girl out in college, was a very talented back coming out, probably a first round talent, fell into draft, has been, you know, I haven't really heard his name in the police blotter. So he's been, you know, kind of fine in Cincinnati. He just got paid. Tyreek Hill has had a couple incidents. And this is a guy who, you know, is one of the superstars of the league. So, it's hard because, you know, as guys, especially, you know, as fathers, you want to see good people on the teams you're rooting for, you know, but the reports that I've heard about Antonio Brown certainly aren't that. What I am a believer in is second chances, and this is probably his third, maybe even fourth chance. But for his benefit, and just kind of what I have to believe is, he signed with the Bucs, you know, officially, whatever it was, yesterday after COVID protocols. But he signed with the Bucs basically on Friday night. Since then, he is a clean slate with me. You know, obviously, this stuff in that's going to trial is going to be very interesting, and it's going to have ramifications on whatever happens with his tenure with the Bucs. But I am hopeful and optimistic that he's going to be a good citizen, because I want to see Tony Totap wearing number 81 for the Bucks, catching touchdowns from Tom Brady, because that is what he is meant to do.
I want to too, Stephen Shea, because like I tweeted, it's going to make it that much better when we beat his ass in the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh. You know,
talk to him, Joe.
You know, you get Vince Williams cracking him over the middle a few times. That'll be a great thing. I really, really hope he stays on the field.
I hope we get to that. That would be quite a storyline.
You know, we wouldn't have to. We couldn't do the podcast, Stephen Shea. You would be declared the enemy. Me and Joey would have to take over the podcast. You would officially have to start another podcast by yourself until things are verified and the Steelers move on and host their seventh Lombardi.
That would be great for business. All right, let's talk from one superstar receiver to another. Odell Beckham Jr., torn ACL. An interesting kind of twist with this game. So Baker Mayfield, he got hurt on a Baker Mayfield interception, very Friday night lights way to get injured on an interception tackle attempt. But he tears his ACL. At that time, Baker Mayfield was 0 for 5 just through the pick. After OBJ got hurt, Baker Mayfield was 22 of 23, and the one incompletion was a spike. Are the Browns going to be better without Odell Beckham? Willie, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, if you put it like that, Stephen Shea, yeah. So you know what I mean? Like, what do you want to say? Like, I'm a firm believer if a quarterback has to continually check in or dial into one guy from talking him off the shelf every week, week after week, it's stressful for the quarterback, right? Like, Baker Mayfield constantly has to see himself get dragged through the media for not being a worthy quarterback and not a good quarterback. And partially because he has two receivers, one in Jarvis Landry and other in Odell Beckham, who he constantly has to check into and make sure they're in good spirits and that they're up for the challenge. When he doesn't have that pressure, like you just talked about, he's slinging it and he's just out there doing what Baker Mayfield can do. If you're the Browns organization right now, you have to say to yourself, is OBJ worth it? Because right now the Browns, they're not going to get a Trevor Lawrence, right? Trevor Lawrence is probably going back to Clemson and he'll be off doing whatever. I don't know another quarterback coming out right now that can help the Browns. So the Browns have to deal with Baker Mayfield, and Baker Mayfield has to deal with the Cleveland Browns. And if you want best for this team, who by the way is in a fairly decent spot, you have to make sure Baker can be the best Baker he can be. And if it's without OBJ, then you have to say so be it.
Joey, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, that's all fine and dandy for Baker after Odell went out. I think it was more of a product of who they were playing rather than just Odell being out. Baker's 5-1 against the Cincinnati Bengals. So unless he can play the Cincinnati Bengals every single week, then, you know, I'm going to kind of be in wait and see mode. I mean, Odell Beckham is a generational talent. Yes, he'll take his shoes off on the sideline. He'll smack talk with fans. He'll, you know, hit the kicking net, all those things. Still generational talent, still somebody when they're on the field the defense has to be concerned about. We saw what he did in the game against Dallas. You know what I mean? So while you had those stats from after he went out against the Bengals, you could go right back to the Dallas game where I think he scored 3 touchdowns and he completely dominated. So that's the main thing for me is, you know, good for Baker for bouncing back. And yes, he did it without Odell. But he's really beaten up on the Bengals, who have not been very good. I'd like to see this play out for a little bit longer, see what they do against the big boys, because we've already seen against the Steelers. We've already seen against the Ravens. Those are 30-point losses with Odell Beckham. So until they're not playing the Bengals and Baker can beat up on somebody else, I'm not sold.
It'll be interesting with the Browns. I mean, they're 5-2. And when you just look at the games they've played, they are a good team. They beat teams that they're supposed to. But when they step up in class and they play a Pittsburgh or Baltimore, they get shellacked. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how their year stretches out. Because, I mean, if they keep beating teams that they're supposed to beat, they're probably going to be a playoff team. But when they step up in class and get to play those big boys, they're probably going to go out early. So the Browns, you know, they are what they are. And it'll be interesting to see without this guy, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, this superstar receiver who hasn't performed up to expectations, if they actually do take that next step or if they regress.
Well, also, Stephen Shea, it's a confidence thing too, right? Like when you're Baker and you're out there and you got this officer trying to – that's orchestrated and kind of designed to help you be the best you, as I keep saying – a lot of it has to be your confidence, right? Like, you don't want to be down in a game and realize, like, oh, did I give OBJ enough touches? Is that the reason why we're losing? Or is it me? Like, you don't want your quarterback thinking like that. You want your quarterback out there just slinging it. Like a Ben Roethlisberger, like a Tom Brady, like an Aaron Rodgers. They're not worried about getting the ball to whoever. They're worried about winning, right? You saw Big Ben damn near get sacked and toss the ball with his left hand up in the air to make a play. Why? Because he's trying to win. You know what I mean? He's trying to fucking win. He's not worried about the play itself. He wants to win. He wants to compete. That's what you want your quarterback doing. And I think for the Browns going forward, I'm not saying OBJ is a cancer. I'm not saying any of that. But what I am saying, if you're the Browns and you do have a fairly decent season or a season you can hang your hat on, build from that. And you have to look within. And it may start with OBJ or it may start with Baker. But right now, they don't have an answer for Baker, so you got to ride with him.
Yeah, I mean, Baker right now is on pace for a little over 30 touchdowns, 15 touchdowns, 7 picks right now through 7 games. But yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, those Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady guys, but you know what it takes to be the best of the best? Some of the most legendary NFL players have in common. You got to be strong and you got to be forward thinking and ahead of the game. You got to work harder than anybody else, just like Tom Brady. You got to come through when everybody else is giving in. It takes grit. And you can't be afraid to get your hands dirty. Just like top-tier athletes, Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. It is strong, advanced, and dependable. It's the most advanced Silverado ever. Silverado is strong, advanced, dependable, hardworking, just like the people who drive them. I mean, the truck, honestly, is badass, not only because of what it can do, but how it looks, too. It's got a big design and is bold and commanding. It is a truck that is turning heads. I mean, you can use it for tailgating, hauling things like, you know, a couch to help a buddy move, tailgating stuff, towing, off-roading, moving, helping your friend out or a family member, road trips. I mean, this thing is awesome. The Chevy Silverado. A great partner. They also endorse the Pro Football Show with Dave Dion and Big Cat. So and Casey. So I'm going to thank Chevy Silverado for their partnership. Chevy Silverado really is an awesome looking truck. So I'm looking forward to checking one of those out. So thank you, Chevy Silverado, for the partnership. Let's talk about the Jets. So the Jets are 0-7. They look like the worst team in quite some time.
Yeah.
A report surfaced yesterday, I believe, that Trevor Lawrence, who's been projected as the top pick in this draft for several years now, even despite recent competition from Justin Fields and Trey Lance, all signs point to Trevor Lawrence being the top pick. The Jets seem destined to get the top pick. Recently, Trevor Lawrence said he's thinking about maybe going back to school. It's not a lock that he goes into the draft this year. Seemingly being a nod to say he doesn't want to play for the Jets.
Right.
Now, if you guys were Trevor Lawrence, how would you feel about potentially being a Jet? Would you hold out? Would you demand a trade? Would you go back to college? What would you do? Willie, let's start with you.
Steven Chay, what do you want me to say to this? Like, honestly, what do you want? How do you want me to respond to this question? In all honesty, you're looking at the 0-7 Jets, and we're talking about a kid who's been a stud at Clemson since the time he arrived on campus. You think he is saying to himself, let me go play for a team that's had 4 GMs in the last 9 years, who has drafted damn near they've drafted in their 5 or 6 first rounders and on defense and never panned out. I just watched Sam Darnold, who I have respect for at USC, absolutely get dragged through the media, show up, get mono, and possibly on his way out the door. Should I go or should I stay? Of course he's going to fucking stay. Why wouldn't he stay? I would stay. Joey would stay. Like, what are you talking about? Play another year, coast, dominate. And next year for the first round of the NFL draft, next year it's probably going to be the Jaguars or, you know, whoever. I don't know, Detroit Lions maybe. I don't know. But it damn sure you don't want to go to New York because the team, it's so dismantled. It's not a good organization right now for many reasons. I believe in Joe Douglas. I think he's finally getting it right. I know there's talks right now that they're trying to trade Quentin Williams. So they're having a yard sale. They're trying to get guys out. They have the money. They're trying to get leverage. They're trying to get more picks. This team needs to be built from the ground up, right? And the problem is if you're Trevor Lawrence, you're saying to yourself, well, Adam Gase probably won't be my head coach next year. Let's just put it out there. So one, I don't have a head coach going into this team if I was to get drafted to the Jets. Two, the organization is in a shambles. Three, the team is currently 0-7. There is not one star literally on its team besides Sam Darnold, Mekhi Becton at left tackle.
Oh, you got a good left tackle.
And, right. But outside of that, he's dealing, as far as the offensive line standpoint, he has a bunch of overachievers. He has a bunch of guys who are in the middle of the road who are scrappy guys. Outside of that, he has nothing to look forward to. So if you're telling this young stud who's balling in Clemson, who just got engaged, who's the king of South Carolina, why would he take it up to New Jersey and play for the New York Jets? It's just not smart business. So for him, he's looking about his longevity and his career. Of course, if you were to tell this man, like, oh, by the way, if you get drafted, there's a chance you get to go play with, you know, Tampa, Tom's leaving next year. He's gone. This isn't even an article. But the fact that he is going to play with, possibly land with the New York Jets, he wants no part of it. So I think it's a no-brainer. Somebody's in his ear. Somebody's actually talking some sense into him. Is it right? It's up for question. For me, I don't want it to see it become a trend. I don't want to see guys year after year who look at the draft board at the end of the year and go, I don't want to be a part of that team and run back to college. Because when you're a first rounder, you're there to be a franchise changer. You're there to be a difference. You're there to set a new tone and start a new culture if you're already landing, if you're going to be drafted into a losing culture. So I think that's somewhat of the coward way out. But looking at Trevor Lawrence and looking at what he's looking at, just like the rest of, just like how we're looking at everything else going on in New York, I don't blame him for doing it. I just don't want to see it be a story year after year, because then that'll leave a bad taste in anybody's mouth, especially if you're a fan of that fan base.
Right. Joey, what do you got?
You know what my dad told me when I was a senior in college and I was, you know, beating myself up about working on the weekends and radio and I wanted some time to enjoy myself. He said, Joe, you have the rest of your life to work. Enjoy this last year of being a kid and your freedom and being a college kid. Trevor Lawrence, you got the rest of your life to be a professional quarterback in the NFL. All those things that Willie said. Go back to Clemson. Have a beautiful wedding with your beautiful fiance. Right. Be the king of the campus. Win another national title. All of these things. You don't need to go to New York. You're the last. You are not New York, Trevor Lawrence. Nope. The Southern kid who is all wholesome and evangelical is going to go up to New York and deal with all that nonsense? Hell no. We've seen players, quarterbacks, generational quarterbacks. John Elway didn't want to go to the Colts, forced to trade to Denver. Eli Manning didn't want to go to the Chargers, forced to trade to the Giants. Andrew Luck didn't want to go to Carolina, went back his senior year, got drafted by the Colts and a better franchise in his mind. Don't do it. Don't subject yourself to that. Have one last year in Clemson of owning the place and being the big man on campus, and then figure it out from there.
Yeah. I hate all of you.
I was calling our producer, who is a Jets fan. I mean, I am actually going to take the opposite point of view here. When you're going to be the number one pick in the draft, you're not going to a good team. You're not going to a good franchise. Like, Willie, the franchises you mentioned, like Jacksonville and Detroit, like, are those much better? Like, we can agree.
They all have wins, Stephen Che. The Jets are 0-7, and they're having a yard sale. What are you talking about? The Jets are ranked last in every category this year. How could you want that young man to think anything is worth going to New York right now? I don't blame him.
Let me explain to you. So we got a GM in place. We got Joe Douglas. Adam Gase. There's no way he's going to be the head coach next year, right? So they're going to bring in a new guy. They're probably going to get a new quarterback, assuming they move on from Sam Darnold. And they're going to have, you know, probably the top pick. They have some pieces. Now, they've got Seattle's first rounder from the Jamal Adams trade. Marcus May is a nice player in the back end of their secondary. Quinnen Williams, you know, he has certainly been playing better. Hopefully they don't trade him for their sake. But they've got some pieces on offense. Mekhi Becton, we mentioned, great left tackle, will be a very good left tackle for a very long time. That is a very important piece if you're a quarterback. Well, Michael Pirine out of Florida is a running back, fourth rounder this year. He had a nice game last week. He could be a player. Ashton Davis, a safety out of Cal. Denzel Mims is starting to come on. I believe he's going to start to play. So they have a couple pieces where it's like, all right, they have to rebuild from scratch. It's not going to be an instant thing. Trevor Lawrence going to the New York Jets could wind up being an okay thing. Whatever he does, even if he doesn't want to go to the Jets, he could just say that he won't sign with them and then have the Jets negotiate basically a ransom for some team to trade up for him. I don't see any reason why he should go back to school and potentially risk injury. It just makes sense for him to come out. And honestly, the Jets with Joe Douglas, if you trust Joe Douglas, which I feel like he's made some pretty good moves so far, I don't think it's the worst spot. The only part I would, I guess, caution about is the media. You don't want to be dealing with like Manish Mehta and, you know, all these guys with the Jets tabloids every day with, you know, all the back page news. I feel like there are worse places to go. Right now, the Jets are at the bottom, but that's what you're going to get from any team that gets the top pick.
Yeah, but I also think, Stephen Trey, to your point also, and then maybe I'm not leaning on your side, but I'm just throwing this out there. There's no guarantee that the Jets are going to take Trevor Lawrence if he was available, right? They can go right back into the offensive line and get a top-tier guard, tackle, center, which they need. And since Joe Douglas is a former offensive lineman, he's an O-line guy, he loves to build his team from the inside out, he may just say, you know what, we're going to ride with Sam. Let's just get us a one or two top-tier guards. I mean, we talk about what the franchise was built on not too long ago and drafting the Brickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold in the first round. That's something they may have to revisit. They're going to have to find themselves a couple of lifers, because that's how you build the foundation of an organization, especially build a culture. You get a couple of guys who believe in football, love football, and particularly on the offensive side, especially the offensive line, man, because that's what happens in locker rooms. The people that people lean on during the hard times, like a guy like how I was, and when I was there, we leaned on the guys like Alan Faneca and Jeff Hardens. Like, there's certain key guys in the offensive line who you lean on, because those are the guys that are going to get you through the gritty days of your season. So that's what the Jets need. They need to find grit, they need to find lifers, and they need to find somebody who's going to believe in the Jets and what they're trying to do right now. And if you already have a guy talking about he doesn't know before where he lands on the board, I'd rather be with somebody who wants me than somebody I have to hire.
I agree. And I've said this for a few weeks now. If I'm the Jets and I get the number one pick, I'm trading down. I'm trying to get a haul, because I mean, they have a lot of pieces that they need and they're not going to fix it in one draft. So if they can get, you know, three first rounders, you know, move down a couple, maybe get a Trey Lance or you know, even again, you build it through the offensive line. There's some good tackles coming out this year. I think that would be a good move.
But Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be like a Peyton Manning type of player, no? I mean,
they say this every 2 years. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, Jameis Winston was supposed to be that guy too. Andrew Luck was supposed to be that guy. I mean, he was okay. But hey, every 2 years, there's a generational guy. I'm not
Andrew Luck was a good quarterback. He just decided to quit. Rightfully so. He was getting his ass tagged every Sunday. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was certainly a good quarterback. Threw a ton of picks. Good quarterback, though. All right, let's move into the games this week. Let's actually start in the AFC East. New England at Buffalo, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Buffalo 3.5-point favorites. The over under is 43. I mean, what is going on with the Patriots? Cam Newton, his line on the season, 67% completion percentage, which is good. 2 passing touchdowns, 7 picks, which is 3rd in the NFL. He does have 244 yards rushing and 5 rushing touchdowns. He obviously missed some time with COVID, but is he playable? I mean, they benched him last week. Is he going to continue to be the quarterback? Joey, let's start with you.
I hope that the Patriots are busting out some black alternate uniforms for Sunday, because it's the funeral. It's going down. They're done. Stick a fork in them. This is Buffalo's time. They've been waiting for 20 years to be able to not only take hold of the AFC East, but to bury the New England Patriots. And there's no better time than this Sunday to do that. I mean, all those stats that you just reeled off there, Stephen Shea, I mean, you can't keep throwing him out there. I mean, he's thrown him to the other team, so you can't keep throwing him out there. He's been completely lost the last 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, the COVID thing, you know, wasn't helping him for any situation, but I don't think that you can keep riding with him. But who are they going to turn to? Jared Stidham? I mean, they're just screwed either way. So I guess you got to keep Cam out there, but no, he's definitely not not the answer.
Yeah, Jason Stidham, I think he got in the game last week and he fell on his face trying to hand off the ball. That wasn't a good sign that things would turn around. But I think a lot of people are frustrated with just Cam as a whole, as a quarterback. I mean, a lot of people are talking about shady footwork, his forward mechanics. He doesn't seem comfortable in the pocket. He makes poor decisions. And if he's the only thing you can really hang a hat on is when he's running the ball, he's successful. But he also is an injury plagued quarterback. So I look at Cam, man, and it's heartbreaking because I was rooting for Cam going into the season. I honestly was. I was like, man, maybe this is going to be the resurgence of the Cam we saw back in 2015. We talked about it to nauseam to some degree between me and you, Stephen Shea. Like, you know, will he kind of rip open the chest and will we see the S again? We haven't seen that, man. And I think for the Patriots right now, is it one of those situations where you may have to go in yard sale mode? You know what I mean? Where you may be like, all right, because now there's rumors of them possibly trading Stephen Gilmore from the Patriots. So I don't know. I think Cam is gone. They signed him to 1 year. They knew this was possibly going to happen. It has happened. And they got to look forward. Now, what the future looks like for them, I don't know, because Belichick, we all know he's smart enough and capable enough. He'll have this team whipped into shape by next year, and the Pats will be back where they need to be.
Yeah. This is a tough one because the Pats had a bunch of opt-outs this year due to COVID. So they're missing a lot of key players and leaders on that team. But, yeah, I mean, Cam has not looked good. He's supposed to, as the quarterback, he's supposed to be that leader. He's supposed to set the example. When you're not playing well, it's hard to do. They're not a team that can really score a lot of points. Like they did score a lot of points in Seattle, but Seattle's got no defense. Buffalo is a team that is interesting because they've looked bad the last 2 weeks. They played Tuesday Night Football and got shellacked against the Titans. And then they looked terrible against the Jets. I mean, they attempted 8 field goals. They made 6 of them, but they did not score a touchdown against the Jets. They were down 10-0 against the Jets. So I don't think by any means this is a gimme for Buffalo. New England's certainly looking for a bounce back game here and a big time gut check game for them. But I mean, Buffalo does not look great. The AFC East in general, yikes. All right, let's move on to Vegas at Cleveland. 1 o'clock on Sunday on Fox. Cleveland is a 2.5-point favorite right now. 53.5 is the over under. Miles Garrett leads the league in sacks with 9. Willie, who do you got in this game?
I'm actually pulling for the Raiders, man. I thought they kind of hung in a little bit against Tampa. I like Derek Carr, man. I feel like, first of all, did y'all see the shot he took on the sideline?
Yeah, by Devin White. He got uploaded. Credit to him for not giving up. I mean, Devin White, he ran a 4.42. He's 240, 245 pounds. I mean, he knocked the tar out of Derek Carr.
Bro, but if I'm John Gruden, seriously, bro, I'm looking at him like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? We have nobody. There's nobody behind you who we could throw out there to keep this thing going. Tom Brady was hot. The Bucs were hot. They did what they were supposed to do. But the Raiders are a scrappy team. You just don't know what you're going to get from them, but they can stay in it. But if you lose Derek Carr, it's over. It's over. There's nobody else that's going to replace
him. Derek Carr's played pretty well this year.
Right, but my point is, it's not like when Dak Prescott went out, you're like, well, you still have Andy Dalton. Things we can see how that didn't go well. Derek
Carr.
He got his damn head decapitated in front of everybody by John Bostic. So my point is, Derek Carr, you can't take those type of hits. You got to be smart. I know he was trying to compete. He was trying to win, but he damn near exploded into confetti on the sideline in front of everybody, and it was gruesome. I want to pull for the Raiders on this. I'm a Henry Ruggs fan. Hopefully they can they took a shellacking from the Bucks, but I think this team can still kind of make a run late down the road. I think once they get the offensive line back, they get these guys and have better continuity, they should be fine. So I'm pulling for the Raiders on this one.
Yeah, this is we talked about earlier with Baker. This is one of those games that Cleveland just has to win, like needs to win. Like this is a winnable game for them. If they want to be a 10-win team and sneak into the playoffs as a wild card, this is a game at home that they got to just go out there and take care of business. I don't think that, you know, from what I saw with Vegas going to New England earlier in the year, they have not impressed me on the road. Even without fans. So I think Cleveland gets it done. It's just a game where they have to show up a lot like they did against the Colts a couple weeks back. They just got to come to the dog pound, and they got to take care of business. So I'm rolling with the Browns.
The reason I give Derek Carr credit, man, you got to figure also in week two, he bullied up on the Saints. He had a great game. Mm-hmm. He actually knuckled up with Patrick Holmes. He had a good game. So he's due from one of those games where he could look like a big time quarterback. So, and going into Cleveland, you got to think his confidence is going to be high. I think he's one of those guys that understands that it all starts with him. If he takes care of the football, he doesn't take the stupid shots like he took on Sunday. And if, you know, John Gruden wants his team to be a downhill running team, they're not that. But when Derek Carr is on, they win. And so hopefully that happens Sunday for the Raiders.
Yeah, if they're going to win, they got to establish the run. They did not do that last week against the Bucs. The Bucs and Steelers are both very good run defenses. So they got to really lean on Josh Jacobs a bit more. One thing that I noticed from the Sunday game, and I was actually really disappointed because I'm a huge John Gruden fan. He obviously led the Bucs to the Super Bowl. 24-17, about 12 minutes left. It's 4th and 1. I think it was on like the 20-yard line or so. Gruden elects to kick a field goal. Down 7. They had all the momentum. They had just scored a touchdown to force a punt. They made the field goal, cutting at 24-20. And then the Raiders never scored again. The Bucs scored 3 touchdowns in a row. I thought that was just an awful decision. Gruden is my guy. Always be a huge Gruden fan, but I didn't want to see the Raiders lose the game like that.
Like John Gruden, I feel like part of his brand, besides being a quarterback whisperer or whatever, is that he's chucky, man. He's aggressive. He's going to come at you. Be loud. And then in that situation, what are we doing, man? It was just totally off brand.
They did a fake punt from their own like 30 yard line in the game. So it's like, you know, points are at a premium. You're going to try and go for it. Why would you not go for it on 4th and 1? It was just a kind of a mind boggling call from him. All right, let's move on to the Rams at the Dolphins. Tua Tagovailoa.
Yes.
First start.
Tua time.
It is Tua time. Sunday at 1 o'clock on Fox. The Rams are 4-point favorites. 45.5 is the over under. How do we think he's going to do? Joey, let's start with you.
Man, I'm a little worried, Stephen Shea. I mean, watching the Rams the last, especially on, what was it? Monday night against the Bears. Wow. Leonard Floyd, Aaron Donald, obviously. I mean, the Bears don't have a great offensive line by any means, but they were coming after him.
It looks scary.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried for Tua. I'm excited for this game. It'll be great to have this kind of hype around a player. I mean, the Dolphins are 3-3, like we talked about last week. They're ahead of schedule. They could be, if the Patriots pull something out of their ass against Buffalo, right in the thick of things in the AFC East.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very excited to watch Tua, but not going to lie, I'm a little worried for the guy. That's a tough opponent to go up against. With your first start when you're staring across the line at Aaron Donald and company. So a little worried. I like the Rams coming across the country, and I think they'll take care of business.
Willie, who you got?
Well, first of all, Stephen Che, I want to admit, man, you've been looking a little skinny. How are you feeling?
Oh, thanks. I went for a run this morning.
Oh, I just figured it was because of your diet, because of Magic Spoon. You've cut out the sugar.
Oh, there you go.
You've turned down the carbs. The unhealthy fuels. I feel like you've been really tightening it up, so I wanted to compliment you on that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, Magic Spoon is in our household. We love it.
Yes, growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of my day, especially in the morning. I loved cereal. I was a big Crunch Berries guy. I love Fruity Pebbles. I love Cocoa Krispies. My mom used to eat Frosted Flakes and throw a little banana in it and let it sog up for us. That was her move. So, but it's time to think smarter, be smarter, eat healthier. Magic Spoon has 0 sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. The 4 flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. That's what they got. What brand do you eat? Which one do you eat, Stephen?
We like the fruity and the blueberry. Both of them are very, very good.
Okay, so I'm about to jump on the Magic Spoon train. It is keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free as well. I'm interested in buying Magic Spoon. I'm down for it. I know Joey's going to get some. Stephen Che is already there. He's a Magic Spoon guy. I'm about to throw it in for me and the wife so we can eat better, especially when it comes to cereal. I'm a cereal guy. Go to MagicSpoon.com. /deep to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code deep at checkout to get free shipping and handling, to be exact. And the Magic Spoon is so different in their product. It's backed with 100% happiness guaranteed. So once again, get your hands on Magic Spoon and you absolutely love it. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund you your money. No question asked.
MagicSpoon.com/deep. Use promo code deep for free shipping. We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring the podcast. Yeah, the variety pack is actually the best way to go because my wife actually likes the cocoa flavor. So it's a good way to try them all out. They're all really good. The blueberry and the fruity are my personal favorite, but they all really get play in the Che household. That was a great ad, Will. You had me fooled.
I had to wheel you in a little bit. Set the trap.
That was nicely done. Did you give your take on the Rams?
Rams Dolphins. I want to see Tua light it up, man. I still have a little sore spot in my heart for Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know if he's still moping around the building, which is tough. I don't think people realize when you see a guy get demoted for whatever reason, it's tough to sit at the lunch table.
Especially a guy that likable.
100%. I love Fitz, and Fitz loved me. So when you see a guy kind of get pushed to the back seat, it's tough. But I think right now, the way the Dolphins are sitting up, they need that spark plug. And then from all the reports coming out of Miami, they want to see Tua ball. It's not no disrespect to Ryan Fitzpatrick because he is a locker room guy and a locker room did love Fitz. But there's something about when you have a new weapon, right? When you have a new toy on Christmas, and you're like, man, if I could just unwrap this, I'm going to have a day. That's what Tua is for the Dolphins, man. They've been dying to unwrap him. They've been dying to play him. Now he's going to be out there. I think my only concern, like everybody else's concern, you just don't want to see him get hurt. You don't want to see him roll out, you know, and it would just be a nightmare of a situation. But I'm not a Dolphins fan, but I am a Tua fan, man. I love the kid when he stepped in against in the national championship against Georgia and absolutely brought it home for them. I've always been pulling for him. I like the story about him and his brother. He seems like he's built for the city because he's not sex, drugs, rock and roll. He's actually the opposite, which usually goes well, especially down in Miami. So I'm pulling for the Dolphins on this, but I'm just praying Tua this doesn't get hurt. That's all I keep thinking about.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the game of the week. Black and blue rivalry, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. So I want to get both of your guys' perspective on this. Willie, yours is going to be pretty heavy because you played in it. So let's start with Joey from the fans' perspective. What does this rivalry mean to you? And is this rivalry back now that you guys are both atop the AFC North?
The rivalry's never gone anywhere. I know the Ravens swept the Steelers last year without Big Ben. That's all fine. But the first contest last year had the Ravens on the rope. Juju fumbles midfield, you know, going down to win the ball game in overtime. And, you know, could have easily split that series last year. This rivalry is the best rivalry in football. It's not close. Seems like every time that these teams play, it's 13-10, 20-17, 23-21, coming down to the last bit, whether it's at Baltimore or at Pittsburgh, no matter who's playing quarterback. I wrote a blog that's up on barstoolsports.com right now about my top seven moments, Steelers moments, and the Ravens rivalry. And one of them was when Charlie Batch went in there in 2012 and beat the Ravens. And that just sums up that rivalry. Is a guy like that going in there, that shows what it means to both of these teams. You know, we always hear no love lost, definitely that way with the fan base. But I will say that as much as me and Willie shit on, especially me, the Cleveland Browns and all their fans, and we were getting ready to play them 2 weeks ago, there's not so much of that this week. There's a hate there, but there's at least a respect that, hey, you guys are our rivals. You do beat us consistently. We beat you. It's the best rivalry in football and it's not close.
Yeah. Listen, I just want to throw this out there real quick. It says the two teams have gone to battle 52 times, including four postseason games. The Steelers lead the series 28-24 in the postseason 3-1. Total points scored for Pittsburgh is 1,062 to Baltimore's 1,035. So my point to it, all that saying that this is a legit rivalry, right? Sometimes we use the word loosely like, oh, this team, that team. No, this is 100%. If I see you in the bar, lock the door, nobody leaves. Like, this is that type of game. And what made my time in Pittsburgh, you got to understand, Baltimore for me was my first start in the NFL. It was around Christmas weekend. When I got the nod that I was going to be starting that game, I didn't know my ass between my elbow, right? Like, I was legit somewhat nervous, shaking, and feared for my life because I was walking on a field with a bunch of bona fide killers. My first game against the Baltimore Ravens, you understand that defense was legit. You had Trevor Price. You had Ray Lewis. You had Terrell Suggs, Jared Johnson, Ed Reed, Adalius Thomas, Chris McAllister. I mean, you had a bunch of guys who were about that life. And here was Willie Colon, by the way, from the Bronx, New York, suiting up for the Pittsburgh Steelers on his first game. I think it was Christmas weekend, a little bit before Christmas weekend, with my family in attendance, absolutely about to shit down my pants. Now, prior to me walking on that field, my teammates assumed I was a badass, right? Because I was kicking a lot of butt in practice. I was biting at the bit to get out there. Well, this was great about the great sport of football. You could talk about it, but when the times come, you damn sure better be about it. And I can remember when the ball was about to roll out and I was about to walk on the field, there was a young Tyrone Carter. They called him Sawed Off because he hit like a shotgun, right? It was a quick bang. That's what we called him. I remember walking onto the field, and as the offense was going down, walking the sideline, as he was about to walk on the field, Tyrone jumped in my face. He was like, "You bad, right? You've been telling everybody you bad, right? You a bad motherfucker, right?" And I was like, yeah, I'm bad. He was like, "All right, well, we all watching. Go get him." And I remember saying to myself, it's true. Like, it's true. Like, sometimes football players, we talk so much and we're kind of like our own wrestler and our own, you know, we have these personas, but the tape doesn't lie. The tape would never lie, man. And Stephen Chay, you're all 22 guy. Doesn't matter what a ball player says. It doesn't matter.
I'm an all 22 guy.
Yeah, as well as Joey. It doesn't matter what you say and how you go about it, man. The tape doesn't lie. Stephen Chay, I can remember the first drive. Trevor Price was all of 6'8", Jamaican guy. He had an inside rip move that was damn near unstoppable. I practiced against this move from Monday to that Saturday, the day before the game. I was prepared for it. It's the only move he had. He would bull rush you, and then his only pass rush was to kind of get you up the field, and he would rip across his body and pretty much take you to the quarterback. Stephen Chay, I break the huddle. I'm young-ass Willie Colon. I don't even have dreads at this time. I'm just even Steven, right? I remember getting in my stance, and I'm looking at the Baltimore Ravens in front of me and saying to myself, holy shit, kid, this is real. Like, this is no longer – this is live at five. You are in the trenches. You are in the NFL. And I'm looking at Trevor Price, and he's smiling at me like if he sees barbecue chicken on the bone. He knows I'm shaking in my goddamn cleats trying to block this man. And no bullshit you, he run. I think we had a quick run play. Then we had like a little bubble screen. I think the next play was like a third down, and it's time to rush the passer. And I'm saying to myself, I know what he's going to do. I know what he's going to do. He's going to take me up the field. He's going to rip across my face, and he's going to try to sack the quarterback. He's going to try to go and beat me inside. Totally prepared for it. I set up. I don't even kick straight back. At the time, I played right tackle. So I give him like a two-kick set. Stephen Chay, this man ripped across my face, took me two. He picked me up and took me to Ben Roethlisberger, knocked over Big Ben. Thank God Ben got rid of the ball. But I remember getting up and looking towards my sideline, and they were mortified. It was like a glass look from Bill Cowher to Russ Grimm to the rest of the offensive line who was on that sideline looking at me trying to block this dude. And it was extremely humbling. And I remember getting to the sideline, my eyes as wide as a goddamn, you know, two planets on my face. And Russ Grimm was like, "All right, so don't let that ever happen again, right? Like, don't ever let what you just did ever happen again. Figure it the fuck out." He was like, "I don't care if you got to block him backwards. Just don't let him hit Ben again." And then from then on, the light was just like, "All right, you're either going to sink or you're going to swim. How are you going to do it, Willie?" And I just fought. I know I didn't have perfect technique. I know I wasn't doing everything great out there, but I was out there just throwing haymakers and just trying to make hay of it. And to my point, later in that game, I actually get into it with Terrell Suggs, which ended up causing a 15-yard penalty because I think he punched me in my face mask. The ref was standing right there. That because of that penalty, we was able to march along and get a score on the board during that game. So I did something that game.
There you go.
So with all that said, man, this rivalry has, to Joey's point, has so many highlights, right? There's so many points along the way that you can be like, man, you know, this is why you talk about the Baltimore Ravens and Pittsburgh Steelers. My Super Bowl year, we had to beat them three times. And all three times, I can attest, because I was on the field, they were dogfights, man. This wasn't, these were two teams who were at the top of their division, who both had the persona of being big, bad bullies. We could beat anybody's ass in anybody's backyard. And we both believed it. And when you come in, when you have that type of mentality, and you, and what made it great wasn't so much the guys wearing the jersey, it was the names on the back of those jerseys, right? When you talk about, when you saw Ray Lewis, we had a James Ferrier. When you talk about, you know, Terrell Suggs, we had a James Harrison. When you talk about Ed Reed, we had a Troy Polamalu. You know, so we had Ike Taylor, Chris McCallis, we had a Ryan Clark. So we were pound for pound, we can go. And the offensive side of the ball, we were the same way. You know what I mean? Like, our offensive line didn't have the big names as Jonathan Ogden or Marshall Yonder, but we did have guys who have played a long time. At least two or three other guys had a Super Bowl already on their belt. And so we had a lot of guys with a lot of experience, a lot of fight, a lot of pride. And that's what makes the rivalry. It was a very bloodlust rivalry. I don't know if it's the same right now. And I think partially is because of the guys who are no longer on in the NFL. But what you do have is guys that who are carrying the torch that let us, that kind of every year while they're in the gym working out, they're marking off, all right, this is when we got them. This is a different mindset. This is Stephen Chase, this was a game, man. The week before the game, bro, I wouldn't sleep. I wouldn't have a week's worth of sleep leading into this game because you couldn't. You knew your manhood was going to be tested. You couldn't get dunked in front of your mama. You know what I mean? Like, I was always I went against Haloti Ngata, who I've been on record, probably one of the best ball players I ever played against from a defensive standpoint. Absolute dog, man. Absolute dog. He was just as mean. He was just as strong. He was just as quick. And he was an asshole. And when I put on the Steelers helmet, I prided myself on being an enforcer and an asshole because I had to be. So you were talking about two bulls who had to fight for four quarters, and he was about that life, man. So part of my anxiety was like, man, am I up for the challenge? And every day I thought about it. Like, you have to be up for it or you're going to get hurt out here. And you see a lot of, Joey talking about the highlights, you see the big hit from Ryan Clark on Willis McGahee, or you see Hines Ward knocking out Ed Reed, or you see those different things. You had to take those shots because if you didn't, somebody was going to. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be easy today. If you didn't take the shot, if you wasn't trying to knock a guy out, or if you wasn't trying to get a pancake, or if you wasn't trying to do the damn thing, you were going to get got. So it was very much like it is a kill or be killed situation. I have never played any other team in NFL that was the culture or that was the tone set in that game. Like, think about it, Stephen Chase. Our tone setter for the Baltimore for that Baltimore game was never James Harrison. It was never Troy Polamalu. It wasn't even Ben Roethlisberger. It was Hines Ward, a slot receiver who doesn't have ACLs. He was the one that would start that shit off because he was either headhunting Bart Scott or he was trying to decapitate Ray Lewis, and the shit was on and popping every time we saw Hines getting a scrap. Every time. When we saw Hines go, it was a smoke signal that the war has begun.
Yeah,
that's a steal of Robert.
I'm calling out Vince Williams right now in a good way. That's what needs to happen on Sunday. He's the guy. He's the tone setter. I need him in the first quarter to come out and freaking be headhunting, laying some wood, set the tone off, say, hey, we're the freaking Pittsburgh Steelers. We're in Baltimore, and this is how it's going down. Come on, Vince.
There's nothing more demoralizing than seeing a 5'11", half-black, half-Korean guy de-cleat one of your DBs on linebacker and get up and smile with a smile this big. I can't tell you how many. It would just absolutely infuriate the Ravens, and they couldn't do nothing about it because we always had Hines back, and he was there to start the fire, and he did it, man, and that's what made it, and that's what made it so special.
Yeah, he was a fun player to watch. Yeah, can't wait to see this game. Absolutely the game of the week. Hopefully it gets flexed by the time we're taping this right now, Wednesday morning. Right now it is at 1 o'clock. Hopefully.
I don't want it to get flexed.
What?
I don't want it to get flexed.
Why not?
I like it in the 1 o'clock slot. Like, I feel like that's Baltimore. You come out soon. I feel like we have more success recently in Baltimore when it's just like 1 o'clock game. I got on the Sunday night hoopla going.
You don't want them in those black uniforms.
Just, you know, we don't need all that nonsense. Just stay at 1 o'clock. We're fine. Let
don't you want them to sleep.
Let's talk about the shitty Eagles and the shitty Cowboys. No,
I want it to get flexed because I don't want to be forced to solely watch Dallas, Philadelphia, Ben DiNucci at quarterback playing Carson Wentz. I have no interest in that.
And there will be fans in the building for this one, Stephen Chet, we must mention.
Right. There's going to be a few fans in Baltimore, which is very timely. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a great game. This is going to be great. Baltimore favored by 3.5 should be an interesting one. They're not exactly what they were last year, and Pittsburgh looks a lot better. I think Pittsburgh edges them out in this one. All right, let's move on to New Orleans, Chicago. I think this could actually be a pretty good game. 4:25 Eastern on CBS. The Saints are 2.5-point favorite. Over-under is 45. Who do you guys like in this? Or actually, let's phrase this differently. What is going on with Michael Thomas? You know, he got hurt at the end of the first game. I think he had 3 catches for 17 yards against my Bucks. He's then out for several weeks due to the injury, which is fair. He was due to come back week 5. They had a week 6 bye, and then he punched his teammate, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and was suspended by the team. So he missed the game due to suspension. They then had a bye. Week 6, and then week 7, he's supposed to come back and then shows up on the injury report with a hamstring issue. He missed last week. He's questionable for this week. What is going on with Michael Thomas? Joey, I'll start with you.
I'll pose a question back to you guys. Could we be seeing maybe the beginning of a little Antonio Brownness, AB coming out, and Michael Thomas? Is this a story of ego getting to somebody? You know, and changing that person once they have, you know, had success in the NFL, once they've gotten paid, all these different things. I mean, it does not look good. It looks like somebody who's completely different from what we've seen over the last couple of years when he's rose to stardom. And to me, that's where the smoke is. That's what it kind of looks like. I mean, if you're punching teammates, if you're having disagreements with the coaching staff, if you're randomly showing up on injury reports, especially when you're that kind of a player that, I mean, they need you out there. I mean, not too many teams would just say, hey, you're that bad in the building and in practice, so we're going to suspend you. I don't know, boys. It seems like there's some smoke there for me.
Yeah, there were rumors that came out earlier this week that the Saints were looking to shop him. Sean Payton took to Twitter and said that's absolutely not the case, which leads me to think it is the case.
Yes.
So,
well, the reason I believe it won't be the case, because if a team wants him, they would have to take a $20 million cap charge. So that's not going to happen. So that's why it's,
you know, the Saints would have that dead cap. I don't believe the team that would take him would.
Right. It says right here, the Saints absorbing a 20. Yeah. So the Saints, yes. To your point. But to what Joey is saying, we got to also understand, this man is Keyshawn Johnson's nephew, right?
So is he really?
Yeah, I think he's related to Keyshawn Johnson. He has a little diva in him. You know what I mean?
Keyshawn. So
I don't think this is a situation where we sit back and we say he's totally Antonio Brown, but you punch your teammate, you've been injured, you have to be unhappy with the way that Saints have played this year. Maybe he sees the end of the road. Maybe he's pulling one of those situations where he was like, let me get out of here, get with the organization. Because Drew's, we talked about Drew being washed for a while now, right? If this is Drew's last year, you think he wants to be around for the Taysom Hill show or the Jameis Winston show? No. I think he goes, listen, let me stir some shit up now to the point where I become a cancer. And they'd be like, you know what? You're off to LA somewhere or off to Dallas or off to Baltimore or whatever. So This may be a situation where I think he's reading the tea leaves and he wants to get out early.
Interesting. Definitely something to monitor. All right. A story, Willie, I wanted to ask you about came out Monday night during the Rams-Bears game. Keem Hicks, who's the defensive tackle, 350-pounder, once drank 40 beers during a 50-cent wing night in Canada with his buddies and his teammates when he was 19 years old. You're a big guy. You like some wing nights. You like some beers. What's the most number of beers you ever put down at a wing night?
Well, Stephen Chill, let's clear it up. I do like wings. I like bone-in wings. I don't do boneless wings like you do. Real men eat bone-in wings. We don't.
Drums
do
are flats, Willie.
Yeah, I'm a drums guy. I don't mind flats, but I'm a drums guy. On top of that, so there's you get 120 beers out of a keg. I've drank at least 60 beers in a night.
60 beers in one night.
I have,
230 racks for yourself.
Bro, I've drank from like 4 o'clock to like 3 a.m. just straight beer before. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
At what point did you black out?
Oh, definitely around like 2 o'clock. But then like you have that one beat up pizza that somebody decides to bring over at a rally. So I rallied. Yeah.
Who would drink the most beers on your Steelers offenses back in the day? You?
Man, it has to easily be between me, Max Starks, and probably definitely Chris Kimoatu. Not Juice is more a tequila guy. He drink anybody underneath the table. But beer-wise, probably between me and Max Starks. Yeah, for sure.
Max Starks is a giant.
And Max Starks is all of 6'8", 300. Question mark, question mark.
Right. So are you saying that you can outdrink Akeem Hicks?
Back in my day, well, yeah, it depends. Depends on how I'm feeling, yeah. Depends what's going on.
Give me a little gusto behind that. Can you outdrink Akeem Hicks right now?
You want to say no? No. I'll drink him. There's not too many.
I mean, he did that when he was 19 too. He's no spring chicken either.
Yeah, but first of all, did he really drink 40 beers? Like, listen, when you drink beer, bro, you get over 20 beers, your mouth goes numb and you get the foamy mouth. And then you start getting the bloated belly. Like to push another 20 in, I doubt it. But I could drink beer. Like beer is like drinking soda to me. I don't really get drunk off beer. Unless it's like if I chase it with bourbon or Jack or something like that.
Oof, yeah.
Chasing beer with bourbon. All right.
Yeah.
Got my weekend plans.
All right. Let's move on. A big game in the NFC West. San Francisco visiting Seattle, 425 Eastern on Fox. The Seahawks are 3-point favorites, 54 over under. Seahawks suffered their first loss this week against the Arizona Cardinals.
That was a possibility.
This is a tough division. Willie, who do you like in this game and why?
Who do we have? The Seahawks versus the Niners.
The Niners. Niners are rolling. I mean, they've looked really good for 2 weeks in a row.
Right. But what scares me is the Seahawks can't stop anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's bad. Like, if the Seahawks had an inch of defense, they win that game. They had nobody. So, something in my stomach says Niners, man. I'm pulling for the Niners. I like their receiving core. I like the fact that they're kind of – I think there was a shot across the bow a week or two ago that they were calling out the Niners' offensive line, saying that they were soft and they really weren't getting it done. Seems like Trent Williams didn't take a liking to that. So he's really gotten this guy – getting that group together, and they're starting to kind of play a little better and playing some bully football. So but part of me is like I don't see Russell Wilson losing back-to-back. You know, like I think he's just – Russell, you talk about let Russ cook. You know, I don't know. But if I had to make a stand, man, I can see the Niners pulling it out only because the Seahawks defense just stinks.
Yeah. Joey, is this the best division in football?
Yeah. I mean, it's between them and the AFC North right now for sure. I mean, some big boy football. And I know in this game, I mean, they better strap up and bring their boots and hopefully the Rocky boots, fellas. I mean, most of the time I wear sneakers. I like sneakers. But this last weekend, I was being outdoorsy with my wife and we wore Rocky boots and they were great. And I had them on. And these boots, not only they keep your feet cool and comfortable, whether you're, you know, working a tough job, like heading to the Seahawks and the 49ers battle, or you're just hanging out in the backyard in the fall time. So since 1932, Rocky Boots have been headquartered in Nelsonville, Ohio. That's, you know, nice and gritty right here in the Midwest. They're a middle America company with middle America sensibilities. They're not a pretentious company. You know, some of these boot companies, they want to charge you $450 for boots, $500 for boots. You can't wear them outside, all that. Rocky makes great boots at a fair price. Give them a try next time you're hiking, you're fishing, you're working, you're grilling. Trust me, your feet will thank you. Rocky Rugged since 1932. These are the boots that you got to have. It's fall. We're heading outside. We're being outdoors, you know, playing some backyard football. We're going hiking. Get a new pair of Rocky boots. Get outside. Go to rockyboots.com and enter the code going deep, all one word, going deep at checkout for 25% off your next pair of boots. 25% off. At rockyboots.com with the code going deep, fellas. But yes, I mean, this is the NFC West is shaping up, really shaping up. You have the Rams bouncing back on Monday against the Bears. The Niners won back-to-back games, just completely demolished the Pats in New England. Then, of course, the Seahawks and the Cardinals doing what they're doing, both 5-1 and 5-2 right now. So I would have to give them the nod over the AFC North just because, you know, the AFC North right now has Cincinnati kind of holding them back. But this is going to be a hell of a matchup. And, man, I'd like to apologize to both Arizona and San Francisco, because last week I said that I think maybe New England would get it going, and that right. was the truth. So they're coming back across the country. Tough rivalry matchup here this weekend. It seems like Kyle Shanahan is just coaching them up really, really well right now in San Francisco. But I'm going to have to go with Seattle here. I think that they bounce back. I just thankfully to our listeners who sent us that clip to clarify for Stephen Che the Let Russ Cook origins from Sunday night. So we can put that to rest, but I right. do. I like Russ to cook here again, and give me Seattle. Very close one, very hard fought game, but I like Russ.
Stephen Che, do we have a pick count on who's in the wins and loss category? Because I feel like I'm dominating both of you guys.
We do not. That's something we can absolutely look into.
Okay. Yeah, we should probably do that.
Sunday Night Football. We're not going to talk about this. Dallas, Philadelphia. If these teams can actually show some fight, then maybe in my power rankings I released this week, I had Dallas as the 31st ranked team. I am not talking about Ben DiNucci. Monday Night Football. My Bucs at the Giants, 8:15 on ESPN. Bucs 10.5 point favorites, over under 46. Willie, who you like in this game?
Yeah, this is embarrassing. I don't even know why you asked me this question. What are you talking about? You want me to say it because you're an asshole. That's what it is. You want me to say your Bucks are going to dominate the Giants? It's going to happen.
I'm going to ask you about a primetime game.
Everybody knows what's going to happen. Tom Brady's going to throw for 4 touchdowns. This is going to be over in an hour. I probably won't watch it. I really don't care about the game, honestly, Stephen Che. It's embarrassing that you even brought it up and you're wasting me and Joey's time with this question.
You know what it is? Joey, who you got in this game?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, Tampa Bay, obviously. I like Tampa Bay to cover that 10.5. It won't be close. The Buccaneers are finding their groove right now. They're very,
they scored 45 points last Sunday. 45.
No, I know. And I mean, Tom Brady is looking – you said spring chicken earlier, Stephen Che. And I mean, he's looking like that. It's amazing. It really is, just to think about
– 12 method, man.
Yeah. Think about the age that this guy is and how he is just putting, you know, deep – bombs just on a dime to Gronk. I saw a couple of those connections last weekend where it felt like it was like 2011 New England with TB to Gronk again. They're rolling. Devin White is scary as hell. He's so good. I like Tampa Bay by a lot.
So counterpoint. So obviously I'm picking the Bucs to win this game. The Giants are a frisky team. 5 of their last 6 games have been one score affairs. So they lost to Chicago 17-13. They lost the Rams 17-9. They lost the Cowboys 37-34. They beat the Redskins 20-19 and they lost the Eagles 22-21. So the Giants play close games.
But since Pittsburgh in week one, I mean, all those teams that were just rattled off, they're all, you know, bottom feeders with the Giants.
The Rams and the Bears are okay. The Redskins, not the Redskins, the football team and the Eagles, and not good teams. But like, I mean, you play who's on your schedule, and they have at least been competitive. So I can appreciate that. 10.5 is a pretty big line for a road team. Chris Godwin's going to be out. I think it'll be a good matchup. The Giants have kind of been Brady's boogeyman throughout his career, so we'll see kind of how that plays out. I like the Bucs. Obviously, I think they're going to win. Gronk looks awesome. I just put a breakdown out on my Twitter about him today. He is an incredible blocker, both in the run and pass game. They had a lot of big runs behind big number 87. He sort of touched on that one game too. Should have had 2, but got broken up the last second. So that's the week 8 slate. One thing we do want to roll out is a mailbag. So if you guys have questions for Joey, Willie, and myself, just tweet it to Going Deep with hashtag mailbag, and we'll read those on the next show. Gentlemen, what are some closing thoughts for this week? Joey, let's start with you.
I'll go to Joey. I'll go to Joey.
Oh, closing thoughts this week. Ravens week for us Steelers folks. It's going to be a big one in Baltimore. Can't wait. Like I said, best rivalry in football. Right now, everybody was telling me 6-10 for the Steelers for some reason before the start of the season. Last undefeated team in football, 6-0. You know, so everybody can just kiss my backside on that.
So you still might be 6-10 technically.
Everybody wants to go there. All right. I had so many of those replies.
Second best team in football right now.
I had so many of those replies, and it's like, okay, guys, like we get it. Let's look at what it is, though. Okay, you play the Bengals twice still, got the Browns again, got the Washington football team at home. There's plenty of Cowboys next week. Anyways, Can't wait for that. But also, yeah, Stephen Shea got me onto the NFL Game Pass with all 22. And no, I'm not trying to be Stephen Shea. I'm not looking at any Buccaneers tape. I'm looking at all Steelers tape. I think it's fascinating. I enjoy it. I'm trying to expand my horizon and become a better podcaster and football guy for all of our listeners and all the fans out there. So yeah, everybody's coming at me saying, oh, you think you're Stephen Shea? Oh, you're a film scout now? Blah, 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 blah. You have the ability to do it too. It's fascinating. I love football. I've always loved football. It's fun to do. Get off my back.
That's actually the whole reason that I started. And I still don't understand why more people don't do it. If you love football so much, why don't you look under the hood? Get NFL Game Pass. I'm so proud of Joey for putting that out yesterday. We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks. He had, you know, asked great questions to me about how you do it. Obviously very encouraging. I wish everybody would do it. So everybody, don't film guy shame. Be a film guy yourself. Look under the hood. See what's going on with your favorite team. Love it. And hopefully the Steelers are going to be wearing their Victory Monday shirts on Monday. Check those out at the Barstool store. We got a bunch of Steelers wearing it. Cam Hayward wearing it. Max Starks, Willie, and Joey. All right, Willie, closing thoughts from you?
Quickly, the only game that matters is Steelers-Ravens. Everything else is just wish-wash. I expect the Steelers to do what they do. I was unhappy with the Steelers on the second half and the second half of that Tennessee Titan game. They went away from the game plan. They became shaky and someone unraveled. I know a lot of people were making, kind of shaming me about, you know, Big Ben's three picks. They were all bullshit picks. You need to talk about the Hail Mary. You tried to throw it before the half and all the other stuff. He was trying to do some things. But going forward, man, the Steelers just have to do what the Steelers do. Just play consistent football. I like the fact that they're starting off hot. The Jets are what the Jets are. I stopped paying attention to them. I'll peek now and then, but it's like, you know, it's like when you
they're playing the Chiefs this week, 19.5-point underdogs.
Like, what do you want me to do with that game, right? Like,
every person that's playing Survivor is picking the Chiefs this week.
It's like predicting a car crash before it happens. Like, you know, it's just 100% that the Jets are going to lose.
Pat Mahomes wins that game left-handed.
Patrick Mahomes doesn't even have to show up. If I was Patrick Mahomes, I would actually ask for this weekend off. If I was him. But overall, man, I think if you kind of assess, and I'll throw this question to you, Stephen Che, before we get out of here. If week eight, this is pretty much the halfway mark of the season. How would you assess the NFL and the product on the field thus far?
I mean, it's been great. They've done a good job, like with the COVID testing and kind of rolling with the punches as far as that. They've done a good job so far. But yeah, all right, we'll get out of here. Thank you guys for listening. So for Joey Molinaro, the man of a million voices,
have a good one, all.
And Super Bowl champion Willie Colon.
Peace.
This is Stephen Che. We'll see you guys next week.